All right, welcome back to the Weekend Warrior Podcast, presented by WTP Sports. This is episode 39. That means it's the Mike Greenwell episode, or perhaps the Brandon Browner episode, but more than likely the Danny Woodhead episode. This episode, we have an awesome interview with Levin Reed. He's a really, really cool guy, one of the Patriots reporters from WBZ-TV. I also have This Week in Sports History, the three-minute drill, the end of my top 10 countdown of playoff games, or actually games that I've been to, Patriots games that I've been to, and an absolute fire pump-up montage of the last five Super Bowls, or the last five Super Bowl wins, I should say, leading into this weekend. So let's get it going. Okay, so we're going to start with Levin's interview here. Listen, I talked a lot of Super Bowl last week. I'm not going to talk a ton of Super Bowl outside of the Levin Reed interview. And so we'll get into that. And then after that, yeah, we'll maybe talk a little bit more Super Bowl. And then we'll get kind of right into our segments. All right? So it's a great interview. Enjoy it. And Levin tells one of the funniest stories I think I've ever heard. So enjoy it. And I'll catch you afterwards. All right, we're going to welcome on the show the WBZ Patriots reporter, Levin Reed. Levin, thanks for joining the show. We appreciate it.
Anytime. It's good to, I'm sure you guys are feeling a little bit warmer than we're feeling here in Minnesota. So if you could breathe some of that warmth through this phone and maybe into the air here in the Great White North, let me know.
Yeah, I mean, oh my God. I mean, it's not much. I mean, it's at least it's 20 here. It's not much warmer here, but it's a little bit warmer. And that's a big
difference. It's cold here. Yeah. It's really. I was talking to Darren McCourty yesterday, and he was. I said, you know, well, I'm from New York. He's from New Jersey. And I said, have you ever been this cold before? And he flat out, before I finished asking him the question, said, no, I've never been this cold. So, yeah, it's cold.
Yeah. Different kind of cold, too, up north.
Yes, so, very different.
Yeah. So, well, I guess we'll get right into it. Have you noticed anything different about the players this time around or the coaches this time around? It seems like, to me at least, they were a little bit more relaxed, a little bit more kind of, you know, like they're confident in what they're doing. They have a job to do. They're not like taking it for granted, but it almost looked like they've been a little bit more relaxed this time around than before.
I think they're just more relaxed. I agree with you. I'm not sure if they feel confident or anything like that. I think every football team feels confident, or you wouldn't be at this point with, you know, the last two teams standing. I just think that guys feel like there's a majority of the guys that have been here before. So they're not kind of stressing out. They understand how the week works and how they have to go about things. It does help also that the time zone last year in Houston is the same time zone they're in now in Minnesota. So they understand what they have to do. They understand the routine. And guys genuinely are enjoying it. There's a couple of guys here who this is their first time. And you get a chance to see some of the guys who've been here more than once to embrace it and say, you know what, you got to go out and have a good time with it. And I'll be honest with you, there's not a lot of light in the nightlife. So most of these guys are staying here in the mall. I mean, the mall is on two sides, two hotels, and everybody's staying here in the mall. So it's guys who get a chance to kind of just hang together and have a good time. There's more camaraderie going on between these guys than maybe a little before when they would get out and kind of visit the town. Not a lot of guys are going into Minneapolis right this time of year in February or late January. They're just kind of just sticking together.
Yeah, I like that. Okay. Now, is there anyone in particular that's kind of stood out to you?
Belichick has been extremely relaxed and taking questions and kind of smiling when there was a German reporter asking me questions. He was like the only time a German reporter asked me questions when he's asking about Sebastian Vollmer. Brady couldn't be more relaxed, wearing different hats, talking about drinking tequila. He went on a story today about getting bit by a dog.
Yeah.
You know, we never heard stuff like that before. You know, he's having fun with everything that's going on. I think with everything that's gone on with the team, and again, we're talking about a team that tries to push away distractions, and I think we can honestly say since 2014, they've been kind of in distraction for the whole time. Right. This was kind of a light year, and also, and you're going to think this is crazy, we're at media night, and the fans are cheering the Patriots, which is you know, never happens. It never ever happens that people cheat the Patriots on the road, but the Eagles did beat the Vikings, so the Vikings are not here. So the fans who came in to see, you know, opening night, Super Bowl opening night, were cheering the Patriots, and it's, you know, for all of us, it was kind of weird. It's like cheering for the knife. You know, right. You don't cheer for the knife, but it's that's what's going on. So, I mean, Brady has family here in Minnesota because his mother's from Browerville. It's a different dynamic than it's been in the past.
Yeah, no, we'll take it. Certainly, I think the way Philly treated some of the Minnesota fans certainly rubbed them the wrong way. So we'll take that. I think Belichick, when he walked off the plane in his dad's hat, I was like, "Oh boy!" Like if I'm a Philly fan, I'm worried right now. You know,
we didn't know if it was his dad's hat or he was doing an homage to George Halas, because if he wins a Super Bowl and gets number 6, he joins George Halas also. It wasn't until we got a chance to talk to him about it that he, you know, that we found out his father's hat. But I'll tell you what, he enjoys history, and every time. This team, especially with a certain group of players, every time Gronk makes a catch or gets some yards, he's breaking history. You know, every time Brady gets a completion or a throw, he's breaking history. Every time Belichick is all of a sudden getting wins upon wins, he's breaking history. I mean, simply alone, the quarterback and the coach have more postseason wins than the quarterback and the coach, Doug Peterson and Nick Foles, have regular season wins. I mean, that's simply alone. That's a big stat to think about. These guys have been doing this for a long time and doing it successfully, and I think they all enjoy their place in history. I think it's hard for them to think about it, but it's hard to get away from it. You know, you're starting to see, you know, there's a lot of guys who have been to the Super Bowl, and they remember Tom Brady going to, so they'll give you David Andrews. I was like, did you watch Tom Brady's first Super Bowl? He was like, yeah, I had a babysitter. He had a babysitter. He had a babysitter to watch Tom Brady's first Super Bowl. Now he's snapping the ball to him like every game this season. So this is the history that these guys are starting to be a part of.
That's wild. That's wild. What's your favorite part of the week of Super Bowl week? Because this is how many is this for you? Is this 3 for you?
This Super Bowls? This is my 8th. This is my 8th. I covered a couple of them when I wasn't here. When I first was here, I covered the first 3, and then I went away and I covered a couple, and this is, I've covered the 3 when I come back. So this is my 8th. Once we get to this part of the week where we're getting close to the game, I enjoy it more. I love the Mondays and the Tuesdays. I loved media day instead of media night. Media night's kind of media day was great. I felt like when they had it on Tuesday afternoons, it was fantastic for everyone. But once they start to get to football, you know, I love the nitty gritty of the stuff, the understanding what's going on. I mean, these guys, as much as they won't tell you about it, as they get to the postseason, the idea is that you want to keep practicing, where, you know, during the regular season, nobody wants to practice. As they get to that postseason and playoffs, the idea is, how can we get to the next practice? How can we get to the next practice? And now it's you empty the tank, and you get a chance to see that you empty the tank. And the Patriots have done a great job of giving us theater in these Super Bowls and in these big games, and you get a chance to see it. And, I mean, Miles Jack, we got a chance to talk to him after the game in the AFC Championship game. And, you know, just sum up the way this team lost, Miles Jack, to the Patriots. And he said, you know, I would feel bad about it, but a lot of teams get Brady'd. We were Brady'd. He turned it into a verb. It's like, we were Brady'd. And there's nothing to – and you know what? A lot of teams get Brady'd. And that's what you get a chance to see as a New England fan, as I've been able to cover the team. Teams feel, you know, you can have more talent on the field, but are you more talented? Do you have more resilient than that guy? And if you don't, there's a good chance that could come back and bite you.
Yeah, he's done it so much. I mean, it almost should be a verb, right?
You've seen it enough for you to make it a verb, absolutely.
Yeah. So now, what do you think should scare people the most about Philadelphia?
Fletcher Cox is probably the best defensive player in this game. Without question, on both sides of the field, Fletcher Cox is the defensive player that they're going to have to worry about a lot. It reminds me of when they played Seattle and they had to put special attention on Michael Bennett. This special Fletcher Cox is better than that. You can't do him with one guy. You can't block him with one guy. You might be able to run at him to tire him out, but that's going to take – you have to stick to the run, because Doug Peterson has the same situation that the Patriots do, where they kind of just rotate linemen and linemen, so guys are notoriously fresh. So Fletcher Cox can probably play this whole game on Sunday and not get tired because he's been rested pretty much the whole season. He's a beast. He can get up the field. He can hold off 200-300-pound guys with one hand and still get to the quarterback, and he's the guy you have to worry about. On offense, if you were to worry about something, it would have to be Zach Ertz because he's the one that kind of flips the chains. Like, he would be your Julian Edelman guy, and that's where Chung is going to have to come in. Chung has been excellent, maybe one of the best in the league at stopping tight ends, but he's going to have to stop one of the better tight ends in the league who's strong upper body, and that's where Chung is strong upper body. You're going to have to see how the Pats are going to handle the run-pass option. I am positive. I would bet as much money as I've ever owned and made that the first call Bill Belichick made was to Chip Kelly, who taught the run-pass option to Nick Foles and said, how do I defend it? Because you and I know Chip Kelly didn't leave Philly on good terms, so why not stick it to them? So I'm pretty sure good friends Belichick and Chip Kelly decided that they would probably have a conversation on how to handle Nick Foles in the run-pass option.
Yeah, that makes sense. That definitely makes sense. I mean, for me, I almost feel like they should up-tempo the Eagles. I mean, because they do rotate so much. If you up-tempo them and don't allow them to substitute, now you can get those guys on the line tired, and now they're not as explosive, you know?
I would agree with you, but you don't want to do it. And I always think you should, too. But I don't think they want to do it if they feel they're eating up the clock and they're getting yards. If they feel like the offense is stagnant, then I agree with you. Absolutely. Pick it up. Try to get something going. But if you're doing 14 play drives and you're getting seven, and then the Eagles are – right, doing four play drives, five play drives, and then punting the ball, then go back and do another 14 play drive.
Right.
You know, so, and don't give them the ball back and give them a chance. Only reason I say that is because let's go back to last year's game. Atlanta had a chance to slow that game down. They didn't. So at the time when they were kicking the crap out of the Pats, why not slow the game down so that you eat time off the clock so the Pats don't have all this time to come back and beat you? So I understand what you're saying, the up tempo and get them tired. But if you feel you're starting to move the ball and you're doing it at your own pace, then you don't have to do it any faster than what you're doing it at the time.
Right. No, it makes perfect sense. I mean, you know, for sure.
Yeah.
You know, you don't want to change what you're doing if it's working, right?
Right, exactly.
You know, but I do think that might be one of those things. We'll see. But
I'll bet you they come out in the game. I bet you the first thing they do, the first thing you see, the first maybe five or six, seven plays, is they come out the game and they spread them out. And they'll put like James White or Rex Burkhead or Deion Lewis. They'll make sure one of those guys goes to one of the wide receiver spots or one of the slot spots. And I'll bet you that's how they're going to – James, you know, because anytime they Schwartz has been any type of coordinator or coach, that's exactly what Bill has done. If you look at this defense, and it'll remind you of the Tampa game they played on Thursday night this year, where the big man in the middle, I can't remember his name, Gerald McCoy, is in the middle. And he's able to kind of disrupt stuff. And the Pats decided, you know what, we don't need to run the ball as much as we need to spread them out. They have a big guy on offense, Mike Evans, who will remind you a little bit of Zach Ertz. And they could run the ball with Doug Martin like they can run the ball here with J.J. and LeGarrette Blount. And the Pats kept the game the way they wanted to keep the game at 19-14, I think was the final score. But they were able to kind of slow that game down and make sure that, you know, in the end, Jameis Winston had to make a play. You have to make a play. And if you can't make a play because you're not used to the environment of being able to come back, then you just get caught.
Right. That makes sense. I mean, you put the game in Nick Foles' hand at the end of the game, and I don't have confidence that he's going to win. And so,
right, exactly.
You know, it's certainly the right move to do that. So,
yeah.
So we'll see. Now, do you think the Patriots ultimately win, or do you have a – I mean, obviously
– I think the Pats win the game. I think it'll be close because they don't play Super Bowls and they don't blow anybody out. But I think they win. If you were pushing me for a score, maybe 24-16, maybe 21-16, but I think they win this game. Philly, I don't know if they have trouble scoring, but I don't think it's easy for them to score. I don't think it's easy. And I think for all of us watching the game, there's going to be a point where you realize that the Pats are the better team.
Yeah.
I would be surprised if Philly – I mean, that game they played against Minnesota surprised me so much because Minnesota didn't show up. And it was everything that coach always says, that you teams lose games more than they win it. And I just thought Minnesota lost that game from the get-go. They just fumbled the ball, and then they threw an interception. You can't lose the turnover battle and expect to win games. I don't expect the Pats to lose the turnover battle. I expect them to, you know, whether it be even or whatever, but I do expect them to win this game.
Right. Yeah, I actually think they might win by double digits, and maybe even not by double digits, but like be up by 14, say,
sure,
late in the fourth quarter, and then Philly scores to cut it to seven, so they only end up winning by seven. But you know, it's essentially like it was a 14-point lead at one point very late in the game.
I would be surprised if we're all sweating this. I really would. I would be. I mean, and again, there's been games that the Pats have had that seem kind of close, but you're not sweating. Like, I think Jacksonville could be a better team than Philadelphia. I think Jacksonville defense will poses their linebacker core and how they get side to side. I thought that would be a huge problem, and it was until Jacksonville ran out of plays. Right. You know, they were just like, we only brought 40 players. I don't know what to do now. You know, until Jacksonville ran out of plays. So I think, even in today's practice today, Philadelphia, they went through their practice and then they did like a halftime where they did a half hour and then they came out and practice some more. I mean, you have to get on the page to do that because this team will do that. And it's hard for Doug Peterson to tell me that he's not going to overcoach. And the reason I'm going to say that, because he would be the only coach not to overcoach against Bill Belichick in these big games. So if he's going to tell me that he's going to keep doing what he's doing and not overcoach, then I'll agree with him. But I need to see it, because I watched a good coach in Dan Quinn overcoach that game and lose it for himself.
That's true. That's very true. And I think going back to the score part of it, I'm gonna throw some stats at you, Levin, which you probably already know, but I'm throwing them at you anyways. Mm-hmm. Since Belichick took over in 2000, in the playoffs, the Patriots have scored 26 times. They've scored 20 or more points, and they're 24-2. So their only two losses being the 06 AFC Championship game and then the 2010 Jets game where they scored a garbage time touchdown. So basically, if they get 20 or over, they win. When mm-hmm. they're under 20 points, they're 2-7, with their only two wins being the Snow Bowl and the Tennessee game. And so, to me, that's the threshold.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I'll give you a good stat for you. The Patriots are 15-0 in the postseason when they face a team that they've never faced in a regular season.
That's true.
So it's always harder for other teams to face them than it is for them to face other teams.
Right. So yeah. So it's interesting. So we'll see what happens, but it is. Yeah, it's going to be a heck of a game, and I think I'm with you. I think they win, and again, we'll see what happens there. But I did want to ask you one question, one other question too. I'm doing a top 10 countdown of I'm a season ticket holder, and so I'm doing a top 10 countdown of like the best games that I've attended, and so I want to ask you the most memorable game you've attended. Now, we're going to throw out last year's Super Bowl, and we're going to throw out the Seahawks Super Bowl, because those two would probably trump pretty much anything. So other than those two, and it doesn't even have to be a Patriots game, but the most memorable NFL game you've ever attended.
I'll tell you what, I'll give you two games. One, the AFC Championship game. Wasn't the AFC Championship game, the AFC Divisional game against the Ravens. When they, the 2014-2015 season, where they were down 14 twice.
Yeah.
And they were able to come back and get the victory with, you know, Danny Amendola throwing the ball to, or Julian Edelman throwing the ball to Danny Amendola. And they were able to kind of get up the field and get that job done back. And two, when I was a young Levin Reed, I got a chance and I was out and about, and I was in a place that was probably, I shouldn't have been, a gentleman's club. And during the gentleman's club, we were there, it was a Monday night football game, and it was Joe Montana was playing for the Kansas City Chiefs. It was 1994. I wasn't at it, but I felt like I was. And they were going up against John Elway and the Broncos. And it was the first time that Marty Schottenheimer had beaten John Elway. And we were in this place and everything was going on and the music stopped. And over the loudspeaker, somebody said, I think Joe's going to do it. And everybody stopped and turned to watch.
That's so awesome. That's too funny.
It was like, and Joe brought them back and won in the Chiefs uniform. It was towards the end of his career. And it was nothing was funnier than everybody stopped, music stopped, you know, and they were like, come on, Joe, you can do it. And it was such a funny situation. We're in a gentleman's club and everybody, like the dollars were folded backwards. Everybody just, ladies were like, hold on a second, Joe's playing. I gotta, you know, we got some time outside. It was awesome. It was awesome.
Oh my goodness.
I'll always remember that game.
That might be the best story I've heard about a game ever. That's fantastic. I don't know how you never forget that one.
So that's why I'll never forget it. I'll never forget that game.
That's awesome. Yeah, that Ravens game. That Ravens game is not on my list because I left that game at halftime. I never leave games early, and my wife was sick that day. And mm-hmm. I was like, I'm going to the game, like whatever. I have three young kids. I had two little kids at the time. And I'm like, I'm going to the game, like whatever. And she texted me like a minute before halftime. And she was like, I'm going to be sick. Like, you have to come home and put the kids to bed. I was like, you got to be kidding me. So my mom came and picked me up at halftime. I left at halftime. I was like, what am I going to do? I got to go home. It is what it is.
Exactly. Exactly.
And I shut my phone off. We taped the game and I watched it and I'm like, I missed that freaking game. Are you kidding me? So,
that's crazy. That's crazy.
Duty calls, you know?
Exactly. So, you made the right call. Trust me. You made the right call.
Right. Trust for sure, me. You know? So that's the way okay. it is. But anyways, well, thank you very much for coming
thank
on.
Thank you very much. Anytime. It. Anytime. And, thank you.
Have fun on Sunday.
Definitely. Definitely. Talk to you soon.
All right. Take care.
Okay. Bye-bye.
All right, so that was a great interview. We thank Levin for coming on again. Really appreciate him taking the time out. He's in Minnesota right now, working his butt off, you know, prepping for the 11 o'clock news. And so, you know, just kind of literally, you know, was on the phone for 15 minutes with me in between trying to set things up. So really, really nice of him to come on and take his time out of his schedule to do that. We appreciate that. They're doing a great job covering Minnesota over there, so certainly check him out on WBZ and follow him on Twitter too. We didn't mention it during the episode or during the interview, I should say, but it's at Levin Reed is where he is, so you could just search him up online. So again, good guy, really good follow too. It tweets a lot of good things about the Patriots, so good guy to follow. And obviously, we see him on TV. So again, we appreciate him coming on. And look, just to kind of follow up on some of the Super Bowl stuff. I think for me personally, and I said it on the interview there, you know, I'm going to double down on it. I really feel like the Patriots in this game don't have a ton of trouble, okay? Now, I know in the first Philadelphia Super Bowl back in 04, well, I guess technically 05, but the 04 season, they won by 3 points, but the outcome of the game was never really in doubt, right? The Patriots kind of led all the way through. I think that this game could resemble that game, and I think they're going to end up winning by more than 10 points, or more than 10 or so, I should say. More than 3 points is really what I should say, which is what they won Super Bowl 39. I just think, to me, that the Patriots are a lot better team than the Eagles. I just feel like they are. And not just that, and I know, you know, you say, well, you know, some of the, if you look at the talent-wise, you know, talent-wise, the Eagles might have more talent. And maybe that's true, but like, I'm sorry, but guys like Alshon Jeffrey don't beat the Patriots. It just doesn't happen that way, okay? And so, you know, you could say, well, yeah, they can run the ball and they can do this. I don't know. I look at that offense and it doesn't scare me. And maybe it should, but it doesn't. And I think their defense isn't quite as good as Jacksonville's defense. And the Patriots did a decent job with Jacksonville's defense. Now, they had a tough time at the beginning. Obviously, they only scored 10 points in the first half and all the way into the fourth quarter. But they were able to turn it on when they needed to. I just wonder if this may be a situation where they're able to kind of take advantage of some mismatches and score some more points than they've been doing, at least. And so we'll see what happens. But I just, to me at least, I look at it and say, okay, I think that they can win here by 10 points or so. And as Levin said, we're not really sweating this game out towards the end. And that's the hope. I mean, you know, Feidelberg caught a lot of crap for saying, you know, the Patriots deserve a blowout Super Bowl victory because it is kind of does sound kind of spoiled of us because we're a little spoiled. I mean, we win the Super Bowl, you know, every few years. Brady's been in 8 flipping Super Bowls. He started 16 seasons, so he's literally been in the Super Bowl 50% of the years that he started, which is ridiculous. Okay, and so, yeah, we're a little bit spoiled for sure. But they've all been nail biters. I mean, like, it's just like I'm losing years of my life. Right, I mean the Falcons game and the Seahawks game, and you're like, are you kidding me with these games? Even the Rams game, last second field goal, the Panthers game, last second field goal. So it's like, you know, and again that Eagles game was 3 points, but it was closer. It wasn't really that close, right? The Eagles had that drive to nowhere where they ended up scoring, but there was really no time left for them to be able to win that game. And you know, McNabb throws the pick with 9 seconds left, I believe it was, but they were backed up inside their own, you know, inside their own 10-yard line. So there was really no chance for them to win that game without, you know, throwing a Hail Mary or two, which really wasn't going to happen. So again, you know, maybe we didn't really sweat that one out, but that's kind of what I'm predicting for this one. So we'll see. I mean, you know, I might be wrong, obviously. But you know, who knows? There are a lot of parallels. People have tried to draw a lot of parallels between this year and the 04 season, right? The Patriots are going for their third Super Bowl in 4 years. They're playing the Eagles. The Eagles beat the Falcons and the Vikings just like they did in 2004. There's a lot of different parallels. One of them, people tried to say, well, JT performed in that year's Super Bowl. JT did not perform in that year's Super Bowl. Don't believe people telling you that. That's not right. Timberlake performed the year before in the 03 Super Bowl against the Panthers. Technically, it was 2004, but it was the 03 Super Bowl. That 04 Super Bowl was Paul McCartney performed that year. And he was, he was all right. But nothing to write home about. I like McCartney. I like the Beatles. But that performance was just okay. It wasn't great. So not a blow-you-away halftime performer. But, you know, after the year before with Janet Jackson and Justin Timberlake, the NFL was kind of like, okay, we need someone safe. We don't want to, like, ruffle any feathers. And, I mean, what's safer than Paul McCartney playing Beatles songs? It's like, you got to be kidding me. Everyone loves that. And so, you know, that's where they went. So, anyways, again, we'll see what happens. I don't know. I mean, look, Fletcher Cox, and he mentioned it. Bedard mentioned it last week. Smitty mentioned it. Like, Fletcher Cox is an animal. He's the best player on that defense. And, you know, Felger Maz, we're talking about today, which is Wednesday. Interestingly, I thought it was interesting that Felger Maz were talking about this, where they said, you know, yes, you can stop him individually, but what type of toll does that take on the offense that you're focused on one guy? And I think that that's partially true, but at the same time, I think it's a little bit more difficult for Fletcher Cox because he moves around a lot. He's not playing one position. He's playing inside. He's playing outside. You're not really sure where he is. And so I think it's a little bit of an advantage for the Eagles there because it is challenging. And I mentioned 11, and he kind of, not that he brushed it off, but, you know, he said maybe we may not have to do it. But I think I wouldn't be surprised to see the Patriots go hurry up a little bit. Because if you can get the same defense on the field, and if you're having success, obviously you don't want to change it, right? But if they've had a few drives and they're having a little bit of success, but maybe not a ton, I wouldn't be surprised to see him try to up-tempo them a little bit. Because, you know, the Eagles are a team that really works on subbing people out, getting people out, getting people in, and keeping everybody fresh. And if you're able to go on, you know, one of those where they're not necessarily, you know, the Patriots will do a no huddle where they'll no huddle it, but they'll take 15 to 20 seconds between plays. So they're not huddling back up again, but they're not changing personnel, and they're not really rushing to the line, okay? And I think you could see some of that where you don't really allow the other team to get people on and off the field. And it makes it more difficult for them. Now, does that mean that, you know, they're going to get them on their heels and score 40 points? Probably not. I don't see that happening. The only way that happens is if, you know, Nick Foles totally shits the bed and, you know, throws four picks and, you know, one of them gets returned for a touchdown or one of them ends up in their end. And, you know, so then maybe it could get out of hand. I don't see that happening with Foles. I don't think he's going to crumble under pressure. Now, he may not win the game for the Eagles if the game's on the line, but I don't see him crumbling under pressure and all that other stuff. So, I mean, you never know. It's possible. I just don't see that happening. So, I mean, to me, if you're asking me for a score, I'd say somewhere in the, you know, 28 to 17 range, somewhere around there, something like that, 28-20, you know, 28-21, something like that where the Patriots are scoring around 30 points. Maybe they even get to 31. You know, maybe the final score is 31-24, something like that, you know? So maybe they even get over 30 points, but it's not a blowout. It's not 45-7 or anything like that. But, you know, it's a one that's really never really in doubt. Maybe the Eagles score late to cut it to 7 or 4 points and the Patriots, you know, just kind of run the clock at the end. I don't know. But I just see this one as not being as much of a nail biter as other ones. Now, again, could be wrong. I've been wrong before. I'll probably be wrong again. I hope I'm not wrong about this one. I hope next week we're on talking about, you know, the Patriots winning another Super Bowl and having six and now having as many as Pittsburgh, and Pittsburgh doesn't have anything to hold those over us anymore, and Brady with six and Belichick with six and, you know, coming back for more next year. So that's what I hope we're talking about, but we'll see. Either way, I'll be back with you next week. Win or lose, we'll be here talking about the game, breaking down what the future is for the Patriots, and, you know, talking about the other teams as well, because we're going to move from football season into hockey season and basketball season, even though they've been going on for a while. Our football season doesn't end until February around here, so that's the way it works. So I guess we'll get into some segments. I'm going to start with This Week in Sports History. I'm going to start with it. Usually I end with it, but I'm going to start with it instead because I have two interesting ones here. I'll go in reverse chronological order because I don't want to spoil the last one because I like the last one even better. But the first one, I'm going to go February 1st, 2004. And again, that's the Patriots beating the Panthers for their second Super Bowl in 3 years. It was the first of their back-to-back Super Bowls. And again, this is the halftime show with Janet Jackson, where Justin Timberlake exposed Janet's boob in what I think is clearly a choreographed move. Timberlake does it with his left hand, reaches across her body to do it. It's like, yeah, they say it was a wardrobe malfunction. I think it was intentional, in my opinion. But I could be wrong, but that's my opinion. It started the more strict FCC guidelines, and now it's got that 10-second delay. So, you know, when someone like Dan Fouts was calling the football games, you could throw on the radio and listen to the radio while and mute the TV and watch them both at the same time, be able to watch and listen. Now you can't do that anymore. The radio's ahead of the TV, so it's a total mess. You could try to, you know, with DVR, like pause the TV and then try to start it at the right time. It's a mess, though. It's tough to do. So thanks a lot for that, Janet Jackson. And also, I was in college. I was at a party watching the game, and I'm watching, it's like Justin Timberlake and Janet Jackson, so I'm like, meh, whatever, I don't care. So I like turned away, I was talking to someone for a second, and everyone's like, oh my god! And I was like, what? I missed it. Missed the damn boob, dude. I missed it. Like, the most famous boob of all time, and I missed it. And I'm like, really? Like, now I have to deal with this stupid delay, and I didn't even get to see the goods. Not pleased about that, but what are you going to do? I guess it's on me for looking away, but, you know, that's the way it goes. So anyway, so that's number one. Number two is January 31st, 2000. Ray Lewis, involved in the stabbing death of two people at a nightclub. Yikes. Was then later indicted on this, and obviously, you know, the white suit disappeared, and no one knows what happened, and, you know, did he rat on his friends? Did he not? Who knows what happened? But, you know, as Chris Carter says, everyone's got a fall guy. So maybe Ray Lewis got a fall guy. Maybe he burned the white suit. I don't know. But nevertheless, that's what happened January 31st, 2000. So, Ray Lewis killing people. Or maybe not. I don't know. Allegedly. We'll say allegedly being involved in the murder of people long before Aaron Hernandez. Not saying he's that bad, but, you know, you get the idea. All right, so I'm going to give you the three-minute drill here, and then we're going to go into the end of my top 10 countdown, and then the pump-up montage. Look out, okay? It's a little bit of a shorter episode today, but again, last week, you know, I had a little bit of a longer episode. We talked football with Smitty. We talked football with Bedard. We kind of, you know, it's 2 weeks getting ready for the Super Bowl. We could talk about a million different things. We could talk about, you know, Brady. We could talk about, you know, all this other stuff. I don't know. We could spend a ton of time talking about it. The Tom vs. Time stuff, by the way, is really cool. I think it's really an awesome thing that Brady's doing. So I'm recording this Wednesday night. Episode 4 has not come out yet, and Episode 5 comes out Super Bowl Sunday. So I think, I was going to talk about it this week, and I decided, you know what, let's wait till after the season is over. And then I also want to see what happens with Episode 6. I also want to see what happens with Episode 5 and where it leads up to. If they finish filming like last week, I don't know. And so that I find that interesting. And so, you know, we'll see where it goes. But again, I'll kind of have more of an extensive breakdown once the season's over. And certainly I've watched all 5 episodes and then maybe all 6, depending on when the 6th one comes out. So, but, you know, overall, I thought the 3rd episode was the best of the 3 episodes. Really kind of cool seeing the way that him and Edelman and Amendola kind of all play off each other. And I like hearing them give each other crap back and forth about, you know, you suck at this, or what are you doing, you're not giving me enough, and they push each other, you know, they really do, and I think that's a sign of a good relationship there, because you have to be willing to push, and know that they're going to push back, right? Brady's not pushing at Edelman, and Edelman's just got his head down like, yes, sir, I'm going to do. No, Brady's pushing Edelman, and he's pushing right back, and as he should be, because he's an athlete just like Brady is, and he's pushing himself, and he feels like he's given as much as he can, and, you know, that Brady's given as much as he can. And so, you know, he's going to sit there and say, hey, you know, don't tell me I'm not doing things. I'm doing stuff. You're just throwing the ball, right? So it was a cool dynamic. It was really good to see, and you like seeing that. And you know they have that fire anyways, but you like seeing that fire from them. So that was really cool. So anyways, let's get into the three-minute drill. Here we go. So for my three-minute drill, I want to talk about the Bruins, and specifically I want to talk about Brad Marchand and, you know, the Bruins last night, or Tuesday night, their 18-point, 18-game point streak ended. It's going to have to end at some point, right? They lost to the Ducks 3-1. And they, you know, for really what happened is that the first period they were terrible. They were down 2-0. They ended up scoring finally in the third after having a ton of pressure in the second and third. They finally scored in the third and gave up an empty net goal at the end. But, you know, I think it was telling. Marchand wasn't there, obviously. He just got suspended 5 games. And, you know, obviously they missed him, right? He's part of one of the best first lines in hockey, right? Catherine Tappan was on, Catherine Tappan was on with the Midday Show on EEI, Rich Keefe and them. And, you know, she was talking about how their first line is so good. And Marchand kind of toes that line. And, you know, for me, when I watched the play that he got suspended for, I watched it and I'm like, I don't think it was intentional. I didn't think he intentionally went for his head. He might have. But I didn't think that he did. But the thing is this, it doesn't matter whether he did or not. It doesn't matter whether it was intentional or not. It makes no difference. The point is that he's that type of guy now. He has that reputation. And so it doesn't matter whether it was intentional or not. If it looks intentional, he's getting the games. That's the way it goes, right? Him getting hurt then adds on to it. Because the NHL does stuff that other teams don't or other leagues don't, which is, you know, they make it worse depending on the injury, right? Because the guy got hurt, then, you know, it's a worse penalty for Marchand. And you know, and again, do I think it was intentional? I don't. But at the same time, it's Marchand. So I'd like to think that it wasn't intentional. It didn't look intentional, but it might have been. He goes out of his way to kind of be that rat and be that instigator, which is good. And I want him towing that line. Don't get me wrong. I think, you know, Marchand is important. It's important for him to toe that line because if he's not, he's not the same guy. But, man, like, sometimes you're just like, dude, would you just give us, you can't be getting suspended for 5 games right now. And again, the Bruins are in good playoff position. They're going to be fine. They're obviously going to make the playoffs. And they're a legit Stanley Cup contender this year. But he has to stay out of trouble. And he has to continue playing for them. He's a huge piece for them. And, I mean, obviously the coach is a big part of it and the whole Tuca thing. And we've talked about that a little bit here. But I really think Marchand is really the focus for them. Getting him back is going to be huge. And again, just staying out of that dirty line. I want him to be close to the line, but I don't want him to go over the line. And I think he went over the line a little bit in that situation, and that's why he got the games. So look at that. That was good timing. So that's a 3-minute drill. So appreciate you for listening to that. And again, we don't talk a ton of hockey here, right? I don't talk a ton of hockey. I'm not a huge hockey guy, although I do want to talk some more hockey after the season ends. I think the Bruins have been the best story in town. And nobody's really talking about them because the Patriots are in the Super Bowl. The Celtics have been so good, and Kyrie and Tatum have been so good that it's like, holy crap! Like that's all anybody can talk about. So you have the Celtics, you have the Patriots. The Red Sox have done nothing, so they've kind of been like a story where the fact that it's like, what the hell are they doing? And the Bruins, people talk about them, but it's not as much, right? Tuca gets benched, you know, Hudobin's playing. And then all of a sudden, now the Bruins are killing it, and, you know, they're the number one. I think they're the number one story in town that nobody's talking about, right? Because right now it's like whatever. I think come in a few months, you know, they're going to get to the playoffs, and it's going to be a lot of fun in the playoffs this year. So we'll see if Tuca can keep playing the way he's playing, and the guys can keep doing what they're doing. Should be a lot of fun. So all right, so let's get into the end of my top 10 countdown here. So just a quick rundown for you, just to remind you, my number 10 game was the first game I ever attended, October 17, 1993, against the Cardinals, started by Scott Sekules. Thanks a lot, Drew. Appreciate that. My number 9 game was December 7th, 2003, which is a 12-0 win over the Dolphins. That was the Teddy Bruschi game, for those of you that know what I'm talking about. If you don't, then that's the way it goes. Number 8 was October 18th, 2009, when the Patriots beat the Titans, or the Oilers / Titans, whatever. There was the AFL throwback game, 59-0. Brady throws 5 touchdowns in the second quarter, 45-0 at the half. It was ridiculous. Number 7 game was November 23rd, 2013. Broncos are up 24-0 at the half, and the Patriots come all the way back take the lead 31-24. Manning scores to force overtime, and the Patriots win in overtime because of a botched punt by Wes Welker. And number six was January 18th, 2004. It was their first AFC Championship game at home since, since 96. They beat Manning and the Colts. Ty Law picked off Manning three times. Rodney picked off Manning in the end zone as well. So that was an awesome game. So let's get right into number five. Number five was the Billy Cundiff game, January 22nd, 2012. I mean, my goodness. It was the first of the now seven straight AFC Championship game appearances by the Patriots. The Patriots won 23-20. Now, it's known as the Billy Cundiff game because he missed a 32-yard field goal with 15 seconds left, wide left. Which, by the way, I still say that Myra Kraft blew that left from heaven. So thank you, Myra, for that. We appreciate that. She had passed away that year, and that's when they wore the MHK patches on their heart. But what people also remember about that is that two plays before that, Lee Evans had a touchdown pass knocked away from him by Sterling Moore. Had it in his hands, was bringing the ball down. Sterling Moore knocked it away. Sterling Moore, for God's sakes. We're talking about Sterling Moore here, was playing corner for them. But here's the crazy thing. The play before the Sterling Moore play, Anquan Boldin caught a pass down to the 14-yard line, I believe it was, and got stripped, and the ball went out of bounds. The player that made the tackle and forced the fumble was Julian Edelman, because Edelman was playing slot corner for the Patriots that year. That team had a horrendous defense, and he was playing slot corner because they just had really no other choice. And yeah, he forced a fumble from Boldin, and the ball ended up going out of bounds. But, you know, it could have been, imagine if he had stripped that and the Patriots had recovered it, and Julian Edelman, a wide receiver, had forced the game-winning fumble. So, interesting game, hell of a game. The kick was actually the other end of the field, so I had a perfect view of it. I'm looking at it, and he shanked it, and it was bad the whole way. It was really bad. So, anyways, it was a lot of fun. That game was a hell of a lot of fun. So that was number five. Number four for me was November 29th, 1998. And this one, for those of you that might remember, is the Bledsoe pin game. So he played with a pin in his finger. I believe it was his index finger in his throwing hand. Guy was a freaking warrior. So Doug Flutie threw a pass. This is against the Bills, by the way. Doug Flutie threw a pass to Andre Reed for the go-ahead touchdown. Like, holy crap, dude. Patriots get the ball back at their own 10-yard line with under 2 minutes left. Okay? With about 10 seconds left, there was a little bit of a questionable call on fourth down. Patriots got the first down. Did they get it? I don't know. Maybe they did. Maybe they didn't. Yeah, I don't know. It was close. But either way, they got the first down with 10 seconds left. On the next play, there was a guy covering Terry Glenn in the end zone, gets called for pass interference. There's no time left on the clock. The Patriots get the ball at the 1 yard line, and they throw a touchdown pass to Ben Coates to win the game. The Bills were so pissed. They were so freaking pissed that they walked off the field and refused to go out on the field for the extra point. So they actually snapped the ball and handed it to Adam Vinatieri, who ran it in for 2 points. It was wild. And that game was unbelievable. Bledsoe was just a freaking warrior. So, yeah, a lot of fun. That was a really fun game. So, number three on the list was the AFC Championship game, January 20th, 2018. Again, I mean, for this one, I thought they were dead. I really did. I really thought they were dead. As a matter of fact, I tweeted out, this game is over after the Deion Lewis fumble. I thought the game was over. I thought they played like trash. I'm looking at it saying, there's no way they're going to win this game. If Jacksonville scores, they're going to lose. Jacksonville, of course, didn't score. And then again, they were faced 3rd and 18 with under 11 minutes left, down 10 points. They convert 3rd and 18. They score on that possession. They don't score on the next one, but they do score on their second to last possession. And then they stop Jacksonville from scoring. And it just, it's one of those things that you just don't, it's unbelievable, you know. And one of the plays that no one really talks about in that game, which is a huge play for them, setting up their second to last drive when they scored the touchdown to Amendola, they had pinned Jacksonville deep. Jacksonville got pinned back deep, and they're punting, and they punted the ball to about the 50-yard line, and Amendola calls for fire. So he waves his arm saying, you know, fire, fire, fire. So everyone pulls off. Well, the blockers pull off, but the guys covering the kick pull off too, because they're like, okay, well, we, you know, let's see where the ball goes. Well, he fields the punt and returns it 20 yards to the 30-yard line. So the Patriots are already in field goal range, down 3 points. An absolutely huge play by him. Super heads-up play. This is what Amendola does. Amendola is just one of those guys that you look at and you're like, man, this guy is unbelievable. So, you know, obviously they win it. It was unbelievable. And, again, they just, they played so bad in the first 3.5 quarters that you just said, there's no way they can win this game, and they win it anyways, and it's just what the Patriots do. And so here they are in the Super Bowl again. So my number two game, November 13th, 1994, Patriots against the Vikings. Patriots down 20-0 at the end of the half, and Matt Barr comes out last game, last play of the half, and kicks a 38-yard field goal. And this is important because as they're lining up to kick the ball, now I'm 10 years old at this point, watching the game at the game with my dad. They're lining up to kick the field goal, and they're kicking to the south end zone, opposite from us. My dad turns to me before they kick it, and he says, you know, if he hits this field goal, they're going to win the game. And I'm like, are you insane? Like, what are you talking about? They're down 20-0. They played like absolute trash. There's no way that's going to happen. Okay? And he's like, no, I'm telling you, if he hits this field goal, they're going to win the game. Whatever. So they go in the half, down 20-3, and they come back out, and they were unbelievable in the second half. Drew Bledsoe set the NFL record for attempts and completions. He was 45 for 70, 426 yards, 3 touchdowns, 0 interceptions, by the way. Unbelievable. In the second half alone, in the second half and overtime alone, he was 37 of 53 for 354 yards and 3 touchdowns. Like, 53 attempts after halftime? That's unbelievable. That's more than you see in a typical game, and he does this in the second half and overtime, which is just foolish, okay? So it's pretty awesome. They ended up winning 26-20, and the last touchdown, oh, by the way, Leroy Thompson had 11 catches. Something named Leroy Thompson had 11 catches. Vincent Brisby had 10, and Big Ben Coates also had 10 in this game. So, you know, it's just some crazy kind of names. Vincent Brisby, Leroy Thompson. I'm like, who the hell's that? I don't even know who that is. But I do know who Vincent Brisby is. That guy was the man, dude. So I love Brisby, number 82, old number 82, Vincent Brisby. That's a good throwback. So, again, I'm looking at it like, oh, my God, Vincent Brisby. And as a matter of fact, he caught, I think, one of the last catches to kind of set up one of the touchdowns. But either way, the final touchdown pass was to Kevin Turner that was in my end zone. So as a 10-year-old kid, it's in the corner of the end zone. I didn't see it. Never saw it because I stood up to see it and everybody else stood up and they're all taller than me and I never saw him score it. But I watched it on the replay. We went nuts. It was fantastic. It is, for me, you know, at 10 years old, you know, I feel like as a kid, you kind of always remember things a little bit more. Everything's kind of a little bit more special than maybe they are even at the time, just because, you know, as a kid, your life is just like, you know, you have these memories that you're like, oh my God, that was so much fun. And I'm sure there were parts of it that weren't great, but to me, as a kid there with my dad, I'm 10 years old, like, yeah, that to me is, it's up there. And it would be number one, except, of course, I was there on January 19, 2002 for the Snow Bowl. And I've talked about this game already. I think one of my This Week in Sports History, I talked about it. Honestly, I was in the freaking zone that night. I was in the freaking zone that night. I was seeing everything. I was seeing everything. And you couldn't see shit, man. It was unbelievable. I've never seen so much snow in my entire life as far as the accumulation of people. And my uncle said, you know, I've never seen snow accumulate on people before. And the snow was coming down so hard and so fast that literally, you'd look over to your shoulder and you'd have like an inch of snow on your shoulder. And you're like, how the hell is that even? It was unbelievable. I've never in my life seen anything like it. There was an absolute savage that was using, they had guys out there blowing the lines so you could see the lines. So they had like leaf blowers, and they're out there blowing the lines so you can see the lines. And he was wearing shorts like a freaking savage. So that was crazy. One of the biggest plays of the game was, wouldn't have never happened in a regular game, but happened because of the snow. The Raiders punted and were going to pin the Patriots deep. And one of their return guy, one of their kick coverage guys, was letting the ball roll. And the ball was going to roll, and he's like, all right, I'm going to down it, you know, at the 3-yard line or something like that. And he's letting it roll, letting it roll, letting it roll. And it rolls over the goal line. He had no idea where he was, because you can't see anything. He thought he was at the 5-yard line. He was at the goal line. The ball rolls into the end zone. It's a touchback for the Patriots. Instead of getting the ball at the 1-yard line, they get the ball at the 20. A huge momentum shift in a game like that, where the traction was so bad, it was so tough to kind of get moving. You could have easily seen them taking a safety if they're in the 1-yard line. You know, all you got to do is get in that backfield, and it's hard for those guys to get moving. So really kind of big play of that game. But, you know, just to give you an example, I was in the zone that day. Like I said, there was that one play, and if you go back and watch it, there was a play where David Patton dropped a pass, and it popped out of his hands, and Wiggins caught it. And we're all kind of standing up, and I was a senior in high school, actually, at the time, and everyone sits back down, and I'm screaming, Wiggy! And everyone's looking at me like, what the hell are you doing? And I'm like, dude, Wiggins caught the ball. And they're like, no, he didn't. The throw was to Patton. And I'm like, I'm telling you, he got the ball. And you know, sure enough, obviously he did. But yeah, I just felt like I was in the zone that night. The tuck rule play. And again, we've talked about this before, right? You know, people could bitch about the tuck rule all they want. It happened. It was called earlier in that year, I believe, in favor of the Jets earlier in that year. So it was a rule. It wasn't the first time it had ever been called, like the Jets penalty where the Patriots lost the Jets game in overtime because a rule that had never been called and has never been called because it was taken from the rule book like a week later. Nevertheless, it had been called earlier in the season, and so it was the right call. But what's interesting about it is if it happened two plays earlier, it would have been before the two-minute warning, and the Patriots would have had to review it, and they couldn't have reviewed it because they had no timeouts left. So just kind of crazy things happen. And again, the guy went under the hood. I can feel it coming in the air tonight. Starts playing by Phil Collins. And me and my dad and my uncle all look at each other and we're like, something's going to happen. Like, something is going to happen here. And the guy comes out and, you know, sure enough, obviously, it was a, you know, it turned out being an incomplete pass instead of a fumble. Patriots get new life, drive down the field, kick the field goal with Vinatieri. And that field goal, it's probably the greatest kick in the history of the NFL. I can't imagine anybody having a better kick than that. And Janikowski kicked one similar to that earlier in the game. Janikowski was a great kicker, and really kind of still is. I mean, he's not hurt. But the thing is that what was on the line for that kick made it even more difficult, right? Not only was it an unbelievable kick in the weather circumstances, but if you miss it, the season's over. If you hit it, you go to overtime. So it's really one of those situations where you're looking at it saying, oh my God, I mean, even the Super Bowl, he kicks a 48-yard field goal to win the Super Bowl, but, you know, if he misses, they go to overtime. If he misses this one, the game's over, and the conditions are worse than pretty much anyone had ever seen before. And there's no way he was going again away from us. So it was the south end zone. Not we sent the north end zone. It was the south end zone. Never saw it. He kicked it, and I never saw it. It looked low. It was low. If you watch the film, it was wicked low. And I'm like, oh, shit, he missed it. I mean, that's all I could think of is that he missed it because the kick was so damn low. I'm like, there's no way that that's going to possibly go in. And sure enough, I mean, holy shit, he kicks it, and the ball goes through the uprights. And I had to look down. What I did is I looked down at the refs because, you know, I never saw the ball. So I looked down at the refs, and I swear to God, the refs, like, looked at each other like, are you shitting me right now? And then they just put their arms up like, you know, it was good. But it was just, it was like almost like that, you know, the look that they shared. And again, I'm way across the stadium, but it was just kind of the look that they had on their face. Not even the look they had on their face, just the way their body language was, where they kind of looked at each other like, are you kidding me? Like, he hit that? But they saw it, you know, and it was good. And, you know, the rest is history. Obviously, the dynasty doesn't happen without that game. So, hell of a game. That's my number one pick. Anyone that was at that game, I can't imagine you've been in a more exciting game, a more memorable game. Just kind of, again, what it started, what it means for this team, and what it started. And again, it's one of those plays where it's like, okay, the tuck rule game. Everyone knows what that game is. right? The helmet catch game, unfortunately. Everyone knows what that game is. 28-3, everyone knows what that game is. The Malcolm Butler interception. So there are certain, you know, plays and games that are defined by plays, right? And so you could just say one or two things and people say, oh, I know that game. The Tuck Rule game. Okay, I know what that game was. Right, the Butler interception. I know what game that was. 28-3. Right, so again, it's those things where it makes it that everybody knows exactly what you're talking about as soon as you start talking about it. So, again, that's got to be number one on my list, and you know, and hopefully, there'll be more to come. I don't know if anything will ever top that one, but you never know. Maybe something will. I don't know. Maybe I'll end up at a Super Bowl at some point or something. I don't know. So, anyways, but thank you for coming along. We appreciate it, and like I said, hopefully, we'll be here talking about the Super Bowl next week. Either way, we'll be back next week for sure. I already have a guest or two lined up for next week, so we should have another good show next week. So in the meantime, reach out to us on Twitter or Instagram. Our handle is Weekend War Pod. And again, it's no E's there, so it's WKNDWARPOD. Okay, so again, Weekend War Pod with no E's, really simple. And it's the same thing at gmail.com for our email address, weekendwarpod@gmail.com. So WKNDWARPOD@gmail.com. So reach out to us. We really appreciate it. And enjoy this montage. I'm telling you right now, man, when this montage comes on, I want to run through a freaking brick wall right now. Okay, I really do. Just even knowing that you're going to listen to this, I want to run through a brick wall for you. I'm so freaking pumped for this thing. I'm telling you, I've listened to this thing on repeat. I want you, once you listen to this shit, listen to it on repeat over and over again until 6:30 on Sunday. Patriots are going to fucking run a train in Minnesota on Philadelphia. They're not going to know what hit them. Again, they're winning by 10 points or more, hopefully. 7 points or more. We'll go 7 points or more, but it will never be in doubt. That's my prediction. Here's the montage. Let's go. We'll see you after the Super Bowl.
Adams on a Terry, 48-yard field goal attempt. Set to go. Snap, ball down. Kick up. Kick is on the way.
Stack receivers, two to the right. Russell Wilson extends the hands he has. Wilson, quick throw. Second and goal to go from the two. Toss sweep right for James White. Cuts it under the right arm. Cuts it upfield.
For Sheldon Brown, you just simply can't cover anybody better than that.
Down the middle of the field, and the pass is picked off by Harrison. Rodney Harrison takes it in, and 9 seconds remain, and the New England Patriots are on their way to solidifying their team as an NFL dynasty. Now they just got Bill Belichick and his father with the Gatorade bath.
How about that? Even Steve got to experience the Gatorade bath here.
Second year in a row, and for the third time in the last 4 years, the Patriots celebrate winning the Lombardi Trophy.
Brady. Caught. Touchdown. Julian Edelman.
Came back to it, Al. It came right back to it.
Russell in the pocket. Russell for Kirk.
and it's broken up again. And is it? But somehow, oh, and he winds up with a football.
I think Butler hit it and it fell right back down to the ground. Unbelievable.
Play clock is 5. Pass is intercepted at the goal line by Malcolm Butler. Unreal.
Out of the shotgun, Ryan gets hit. Ball is out. This is a fumble. New England has it. Here's Edelman broken up, and the pass is no sign yet. Oh, that's a catch.
Oh, my God.
That's incredible.
It's a tied game in Super Bowl 51.
High fives for everybody.
The right, Bennett to tight end left. Second and goal to go from the 2. Toss sweep right for James White. Cuts it under the right arm. Cuts it upfield. Driving forward. Diving to the goal line.
It's still
a touchdown. And a title for the Patriots.
I can't believe it.
Stack receivers, 2 to the right. Russell Wilson extends the hands he has. Wilson, quick throw. And it's intercepted. Intercepted by Malcolm Butler. Butler has it at the 1. Malcolm Butler stepped in front of the throw.
No way.
And the Patriots have possession with 20 seconds to go.
Adam Vinatieri, 48-yard field goal attempt. Set to go. Snap ball down. Kick up. Kick is on the way. And it is
good.
Football Conference champions, the New England Patriots.